Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Good Calls. I'm Dean Blandino, and we got a lot to talk about. Let's get right to it. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Travis Hanson. Travis, what's up?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, Travis. How are you?
I'm great.
That's great. That's great. Joe Madrid on audio. Joe?
Not so weird for Travis today. I'm a little disappointed.
That was less awkward than normal. So it is the new Travis. We're going to talk about new Travis later. But it is the new Travis. The guy's got more. He's got more going on. He's just more confident. More secure.
It's because of this show, Dean. It's because of you.
You know, I did get someone tell me, someone that watches the show or listens to the show, who met you recently and said that you're much funnier in person than you are on the show. Where is that, Travis?
I guess I need to stop holding back.
There you go. That's the Travis.
Just be yourself, man.
Just be yourself. Be yourself. So let's get right into it. NFL Week 17. It's funny that we were in the studio on Sunday and it was kind of a blah day. There was not a lot going on. No real controversy. The games, yeah, there were a couple of games that ended up going down to the wire, but it just felt kind of blah.
I have to think the league office probably liked that.
Yeah, because no one was talking about officiating. You had a couple of games. You had Jameis Winston join the 30-30 club, first one in NFL history, not in a good way.
On an epic interception.
It's unbelievable. A walk-off pick six to end the season. And this is obviously a guy that is talented. He threw for 5,000 yards this year.
Only the eighth person to do it.
And look at the list. You're talking about Breeze and Peyton and Marino. And that list, that's an exclusive list. And I think it's going to be an interesting decision that Tampa has. Because obviously 5,000 yards, he's talented, but you got to cut down on the turnovers.
Yeah, 30-plus touchdowns is no joke either.
No question. So, you know, the late games, there really wasn't much. The Eagles, you know, Eagles blew out the Giants. Cowboys, you know, blew out Washington. But obviously the Eagles winning, they win the NFC East. And we were talking about there were a couple of good overturns for pass interference. And there was one in the Saints game. There were a couple of others. There was one in New England where the flag was thrown on the field initially. And for offensive pass interference on Ben Watson, it was picked up, went to replay. Miami had to challenge it. They put the flag back down in replay. So there were some good decisions, and we were actually talking about it. It felt like that we were getting to a good place with this rule. It's been an up-and-down season. The standard has been tweaked or adjusted, and it felt like, you know, in the last couple of weeks we've gotten to a pretty good place going into the postseason.
Only took 17 weeks to find the stride.
Yeah. And then Sunday night happened. And so obviously this was the biggest game of the week. This was the game that got flexed. We're going to talk about flexes later. But this was the game that got flexed. And Seattle, San Francisco, and this was the difference between the one seed in the NFC and the five seed. And it goes down to the wire, and we out and had a play. Seattle, third and goal from, I think it was maybe the 6-yard line. And they throw up a pass to Jacob Hollister in the end zone. There's a lot of contact. No pass falls incomplete. No flag and no replay review. And we just line up on fourth down, go for it, play down to the goal line, ruled short. Niners pick it up. That play goes to review. And they determined that the call in the field stood, that he was down short. It was a fourth down play, and the Niners get the ball. But I want to talk about that third down play. It sure looked like pass interference.
Do you think if it does go to review, there's enough to turn it around?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things, I think the common misconception, because you heard people, you know, whether it was social media or talking about it, saying that the play wasn't even reviewed. Well, yes, it was reviewed. There just wasn't a formal review where the game was stopped and the referee came over, put the headset on, and looked at it. So the replay official in the stadium and the people in New York are looking at every play inside 2 minutes, and they're looking at all reviewable aspects of all of those plays. So they did look at it, and they determined that it wasn't, and we've heard this before, it wasn't clear and obvious. He didn't significantly hinder. And now Riveron, the senior vice president of officiating, went into more of a detailed explanation in the pool report. And I'll just paraphrase, but what Al said was that they were trying to determine if the receiver initiated the contact, and they couldn't quite tell if the defender, the receiver was initiating the contact, if the defender hindered the receiver's ability to make a play on the ball. And that's why they chose not to stop the game and add the foul. Look, there is some contact, and Hollister does. You see this, especially in the end zone. You see tight ends, receivers, they feel for that defender. They try to create, you know, just own that space on the field, and the defender is entitled to his space on the field. But I didn't see a push-off. I didn't see anything that would raise the level of offensive pass interference. And then when Hollister turns and he tries to get to the football with the ball in the air, Warner, the Niner defender, won't let him. And Warner wasn't playing the ball. It looked like he had a hold. He had a grab of his left shoulder, certainly. And Hollister, to me, looked like he was affected in his ability to make a play on the ball. No call on the field. And they didn't determine that it was enough in replay. And again, I don't think this is quite the level of the NFC Championship game last year. But I do think it was pass interference, and it felt like an opportunity for the league to make this call, and it would almost have almost justified the rule in a way. You know, this is the type of play that the rule was put in for.
Right. Agree.
And because look, Seattle would have still had to score. They would have had the ball first and goal from the one. There was, you know, maybe 15 seconds left, so they would have still had to score. And we've seen that's not a gimme with Seattle. We've seen that before from the 1 yard line. But the thing is, their chances of winning that game go up if we get that call. And it's a crazy, crazy deal, because you can have a week where everything goes right, and literally on the next to last play of the last game of the year, and that's what everybody's going to talk about.
Do you think? I mean, they got to the one the very next play, right? And then Carroll had that, you know, what happened?
No, that was earlier. Before that. So the delay game happened before. The delay game, and obviously, look, the Seahawks took a delay of game. And
what was that all about?
Well, I think Pete owned it, and it's just like, it was just a personnel deal. They had a pass to the 1 yard line. The clock was running. They spiked the ball to make it second down, and then there was some confusion. And you see this sometimes, and players tend to do this when they spike the ball to kill the clock. It's almost like they feel like it's a timeout. It's not. The play clock starts immediately, and you have 40 seconds. And it felt like they all relaxed a little bit. And obviously, they didn't have. You know, I think there was some issues with the personnel group that was supposed to be in the game, and they took a delay a game because. You know, they were out of timeouts. That's on the Seahawks. But again, this was a big play in that game with obviously a third and goal and no call made. And again, the league obviously felt it wasn't enough. It's interesting. It's just one of those plays where I felt like if you make that call, there isn't a lot of people crying or complaining that it wasn't pass interference. I really think that making that call, and you wouldn't have had this type of controversy. Obviously, people in San Francisco would have been upset, but right. I think it's not what we're talking about today if they make that call.
I feel like if they make that call, you kind of right the wrongs of all of the calls they missed all season long without changing any of them. This is the last one before going into the playoffs. You kind of have a clean slate going in. Now it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Nobody really even knows.
Well, yeah, it casts that shadow of doubt going into the postseason, because we were even saying it during the early games on Sunday that it felt like we were in a good place. Yeah. And now, you know, there's some doubt, and there's 11 games left, and you've got the wild card divisional, the two championship games, and the Super Bowl. And I think the future of this rule is, I mean, it may have already been decided. Who knows? But I think it really is going to hinge on these next 11 games and how this plays out. And we'll see. And you know, in talking about the playoffs, and we saw it was interesting, the matchups, and we've got obviously the matchups. And I was talking to Eric Shanks, the president of Fox Sports, on Sunday, and he was talking about, you know, what the network's preference would be. And this was obviously before the NFC East was decided. And obviously Eric, you know, he said, listen, if Dallas is in, then obviously we want Dallas, because love them or hate them, they rate the highest, and obviously they're going to draw in any time slot. It was interesting to hear Eric say that, and then also talk about, you know, what matchups would have been intriguing for Fox. And he mentioned the 4-5 matchup, which we now know is Seattle Philadelphia, that would have been an interesting matchup. And also the time slots, where he said that the late Sunday time slot is the preferred time slot. But you could have teams like Dallas, like New England, that can carry the Saturday late time slot. And I think, you know, what we've seen, and it's a combination, the league looks at those time slots and they look at the networks and they get input, but they ultimately decided, you know, and Travis, you can kind of run down what the matchups are and what the, you know, we kind of figured that Buffalo Houston would be the early matchup on Saturday. It felt like that, you know, it felt like that AFC.
Well, it seems like the AFC South matchup AFC always South. Falls in there. Those teams just aren't as exciting, don't have as many.
They own that time slot. Yeah. They own that time slot.
But I think that's going to be a good game.
I do. I think that's going to be a really good game. And I think, you know, and then you look at
the late Saturday game night Saturday night is
Tennessee, New England. Yeah, and having both AFC games, which is a little bit unusual, having both AFC games on one day.
And this is the first time, Dean, since 2009, since the Patriots played on Wild Card Weekend, and they've never made it to the Super Bowl when they haven't had a bye.
And I think that was, other than San Francisco Seattle, I think that was the biggest storyline coming out of Week 17, is totally. That Miami beating New England not getting the bye. And so now New England's path to the Super Bowl is they have to win two games on the road to get to the Super Bowl. And
it potentially plays out as a Tennessee matchup at home and then going on the road to Kansas City and Baltimore if those teams win out.
Those are two
out of three
tough
teams they've lost to already.
Tough matchups. You know, but again, you can't ever count New England out.
No.
It's not, but they do have a much tougher road. And then you look at the matchups on Sunday, and we have the early, Fox has the early game, which is Minnesota and New Orleans, which
all the memories of that matchup.
Obviously, you look at
the
Favre
pick,
the so many plays, and then the mini, what was it, the Minneapolis miracle. And so I'm sure, what's the over under on how many times we see that play during that game? Probably 4 or 5, I think. I'm going
four
five,
and a half.
Four and a half.
I'll take the under.
4.5. And then we get the Seattle-Philly. And how about Philadelphia? What an unbelievable. I feel like Carson Wentz is the only healthy player they have on that roster that is a starter.
I saw a stat that, yeah, totally. They have so many injuries at the skill position. I saw a stat that he's the first quarterback in three consecutive seasons to throw 30 or more touchdowns and 7 or less picks.
And
that's incredible.
And he has, there's some ridiculous stat where he's thrown for over something, you know, 4,000 yards, and he doesn't have
no 500 yard receivers.
It's
unreal.
It's insane what they've done and the job that Doug Peterson has done. With all the injuries that they've had. And so again, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. That's how the league and the networks work through the schedule and the assigning of those games. And you know, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about how the officials get assigned to the postseason. You know, we were talking about it, and Travis, you asked me about, you know, we got the playoff matchups for the teams. How do the officials get assigned to postseason? And it's an interesting process because, unlike the teams, right, the officials, there's no wins and losses. They're evaluated throughout the season. And that's where people say, well, they're not held accountable. Well, they are. They're evaluated throughout the season, and it's actually they're evaluated in comparison to their peers. So at each position. So there's 7 positions on the field, and you know, you have referee, umpire, down judge, line judge, field judge, side judge, and back judge. So 17 crews, you have 17 referees, 17 umpires, et cetera. And those 17 officials, you're evaluated over the course of the season, and then the league looks at, okay, our 17 line judges, and they put them into tiers, and there's tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3, and it's based on a combination of their grades, their calls, the calls that they make, they have an accuracy percentage, so the number of calls that they made, how many are correct. There's things called no calls. So if Travis is responsible for a hold that was not called and should have been called, then he gets a no call. And all of that goes into this percentage. And most of them grade out, you know, in the 90th percentile. But they're evaluated that way. And the top officials in that position group will be in the first tier, and then they look for a cutoff point and a significant drop. And then you get your second tier, and then your third tier. Your third tier are officials that did not make the standard. There's a minimum performance standard, and your third tier officials who are in that standard, who are below that standard, they do not get a postseason assignment. Okay, they're done. They don't get an on-field assignment. They don't get an alternate assignment. I'll talk about alternates in a second. So they're done for the year. They're notified. And what happens when you're in tier three, now you almost enter this kind of remedial program where you're gonna basically get extra help to try to make you see what your deficiencies were, where you can get better. If you're in tier three for consecutive seasons, now we start to get into, okay, we might need to let you go. And I think that's what you typically would see. I know when I was there, if I had an official who was in tier three for consecutive seasons, and I didn't think that official was going to make the jump to get out of it, then we just cut ties and we moved on. And it's one of those things. And that happens every year. Now you get your tier two officials. That's where those officials are going to work your wild card round, your divisional round. And your tier one officials are going to work Super Bowl and championship games. So you want your best officials in those games. And there's been a lot of discussion about the concept of keeping the crews together.
I was going to ask you, are you in favor of that all-star kind of crew, or you like keeping the crews together?
I'm in favor of a hybrid. I think I like the continuity. I like the crew that has worked together all year. I think communication is better. I think you get that familiarity and that helps. But I also think that on every crew, there are some officials that are better than others. And on some crews, they know where the weak spots are. They almost like account for it. And so what I would never like to see is to have the crew that rated the best, but you have a field judge that was actually the 16th rated field right. judge out of 17. And I'm going to have that field judge in the most important game of the season. And you just worry about that. So I think the crew concept is good. And then you have to, if there's somebody that is just not up to the standard, then you replace that person. And from somebody, because you can have somebody that is just one of your best officials, but because the crew didn't grade out over the course of the year, they're sitting at home. And you know, it's not, I don't think there's any perfect answer. I do think that, and even in this all-star, and I hate to say all-star, right. but even in this individual base system, you will look at, and I'm sure Al Riveron and his crew will do the same thing that we did when I was there, is that you'd look at, okay, here are the officials that we've got that we're going to assign to these games. Let's look at and try to put them together based on who they work with this year. So I have a referee and an umpire that were on the same crew. Let's put them together. Or a line judge and a field judge who are on the same side of the field. Let's put them together. So you can create some of that continuity or at least, you know, continue that continuity with, within that individual base system. And look, they will go through. So what they're doing is tomorrow will be a sprint. Tomorrow they will evaluate Monday. That's right. Monday, they will evaluate all of the week 17 games, and then they'll start to put together. They have a pretty good sense through week 16. And typically, because of the time crunch, week 16 is where you say, okay, it would have to be something significant in week 17 to really change where these officials are in terms of tiers. And so they'll finalize all that, and they'll put together the crews, and they'll start notifying the wild card officials on Tuesday and notifying the clubs that are who are playing those games. Then they'll do the following week, they'll notify the divisional, they'll have championship, Super Bowl. And so they'll have a spreadsheet, and it'll have all the officials, and then they'll start notifying people. So it's an interesting process.
And I have a question for you. Do they know throughout the season where they're ranking?
They don't get a report every week. They used to, years and years ago, they used to get a report every week where they ranked. And to be honest with you, it would change how officials officiated. Because they knew Like going into the end of the season, okay, I'm the third rated side judge, okay? And the top three are eligible for the Super Bowl. And they knew that. And so going into week 15 and week 16, they officiated differently. Some officials would officiate. They would be less likely to throw the flag because that would draw attention to themselves and increases their potential to get a downgrade. And that's why it was important, at least when I was there, to not – I don't want officials worrying about grades. I want them officiating the game and not officiating differently because they're worried about making a mistake that's going to impact their postseason assignment. Mm-hmm. And so they don't know. That said, they do – a lot of officials do keep track. It's just something they do. And, you know, I hate that. I was always a big proponent of I want to get away from the grades. I want to get away from that system and just teach and make sure the officials get positive feedback and they know when they make a good call and when they make an incorrect call. And but again, there's so many different things that go into that because you have to have, if you want to fire an official, you have to have a paper trail. You have to have the evaluation because the union will challenge it. And it's not a simple process, but that's going to be, you know, you have a staff of 125 officials. Not every official is going to get a postseason game. Now, there are alternate officials. There are three alternate officials, wildcard divisional. There's three alternate officials, and I believe championship went up to five, and Super Bowl is five. And so you have those alternate officials at different positions that if an official does go down, with an injury, you can get you have somebody to step in. Whereas in the regular season, if an official gets hurt, you just don't have the bodies. You have to go to six official mechanics and adjust. And you obviously don't want that to happen in the playoffs. And you have the people to do it, so you do have the alternates in the postseason. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk college football playoff. A lot of controversy. Clemson, Ohio State, not so much LSU, Oklahoma. Next on Good Calls. All right, we're back on Good Calls. More energy in this segment.
Sound like you're a little down. Did you guys go out?
So
Saturday,
let's talk,
what happened
let's
there?
Talk college football. Yes, Saturday, none of the games were on Fox, so Joe and I went out to watch
the games. I got
the
invite, don't worry, guys,
Travis was invited, we needed an SWG, but he was not able to attend.
I went family.
We had a good time, and, you know, first game, LSU-Oklahoma, not a lot. I mean, LSU just, Joe Burrow, obviously, going to be the number one pick. The Bengals are going to take him. Eight total touchdowns, seven passing.
Ridiculous.
One rushing touchdown. And what he played, 3.5 quarters? It was crazy.
He had all those touchdown passes in the first half.
So they look ridiculous. There was early in the game when it was still close, there was a pretty blatant missed pass interference on LSU that was not called. And obviously, you know, I think that's one that would have gotten overturned in the NFL. And then there was a flagrant, I thought it was flagrant, targeting call that wasn't called on the field. Replay, I thought, did a nice job, stopped the game and added targeting. And the Oklahoma player was disqualified. But let's talk Clemson, Ohio State. So we actually went out and we were in an Ohio State bar and it was a lot of fun. And we were doing, I was doing impromptu rules analysis for the fans at the bar.
This is true.
And every time
people would pay to see that stuff.
Every time there was
any time a close call, the whole bar would
look at me, and I was single, and I would put down my White Claw, and I would make, you know, I would explain what was happening. And so there were four reversals in the game, and there was, you know, one early on a catch, ruled incomplete, reversed. The hand touched down in bounds before the feet touched out of bounds, and I thought that was good. And we had some good discussions about in college, the hand does put a player in bounds. In the NFL, the hand does not. It would have to be a forearm, a shoulder, an elbow. So that was a good overturn. Then J.K. Dobbins, touchdown ruled on the field, reversed, went to the ground, ball hit the ground, came loose, good overturn. Went Ohio State fans didn't like it, but I think they understood that one. Then we got into the two that were controversial. And it was, you know, OSU, they were up in the second quarter. They were up 16-0, and it was a third down play, and they were going to get off the field. It was an incomplete pass, but Sean Wade came in, hit Trevor Lawrence, lowered his head, initiated contact with the crown of his helmet. Replay stopped the game, added the foul in replay, and the 15 yards automatic first down. Clemson continued the drive and scored their first touchdown, and obviously they came back and won the game. So it's a big, big call. I thought it was targeting. I did. I thought it was a good job. You know, the college rule, the way they define crown of helmet is the area above the face mask. It goes 360 degrees around the helmet. I thought Wade came in, dropped his head, initiated forcible contact with the crown. So Lawrence, whether he's in a defenseless posture or not, if you initiate that contact with the crown of the helmet to any part of that player's body, it's a foul. And I thought that was the right call. And that was the one. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or your energy is still, I don't know why your energy should be low, Travis. You didn't do anything on Saturday.
I was busy with my family. How can
you
I say?
You are so just busy with my family.
I thought it was I liked it just, as a targeting call personally.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to, I mean, you said in the bar, that's literally the rule by definition. That's targeting.
It is 913 is that rule. And I think we all have this idea of the crown of the helmet, and for many, many years, the crown of the helmet is always, you think about spearing, if you go back, and it's the top, the very top of the helmet, you see the button of the helmet, but the NCAA rule defines crown, like I said, it's above the face mask, and it's 360 degrees, and they want to encourage players to come in head up when possible, you know, or get the head off to the side.
Yeah.
Not always possible, but look, that was a free run at a quarterback, at a stationary target. Okay, this was not a receiver who was airborne and then coming to the ground or moving. That was a stationary target, and the onus is on the defensive player to keep the head up or get the head to the side, and he didn't. And it's a tough call, but it was the right call. Now we get into... In the third quarter, and this was the one everybody's talking about, and they're going to continue to talk about. And this was Justin Ross. Clemson has the ball. Justin Ross ruled a catch fumble. Ohio State picks it up. They go for a touchdown. Replay comes back, looks at it, and I mean, we're at the bar, and we're surrounded by Ohio State fans. When I saw it live, I said, and Joe, you know, I said, wow, that's quick. It feels incomplete.
It was really fast.
And that's where we get into that time element. It was fast. Watching it in real time, it happened quickly. And then, so I said to the group, I said, wow, it initially it looks incomplete. Then they started showing the replays. And then when I saw the replays, I said, oh, I'm not so sure. Because he got control. He took several steps. He started to bring it into his body. And this is the biggest, this is the deal we're talking about on field in real time and then replay slow motion. And it can look a lot different. And because we can slow things down, we can see things that the human eye can't see and can't process in real time. And we were able to see in replay that he had control. He took several steps. And he pulled it into his body before it came loose. I did not see enough to overturn it. And I said that. And when I said that to the group, the entire bar cheered like I had made the call.
They went nuts.
They went nuts. They were cheering. They were buying me shots. Like yeah. It was, they were all super excited until.
And then. Dun, dun, dun.
Then the referee came on the mic and said, after further review, it's an incomplete pass. So I went from the
hero.
Penthouse to the outhouse, not happy.
That's kind of how it goes on Twitter too with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Give me my shots back.
There's a whistle. There was a couple of Clemson supporters that were happy.
Yeah.
But again, I was surprised. I was surprised they were.
That was just a big, big play. What was the adjustment made at halftime? Because it looked like Ohio State was dominating them in the first half, and then.
What? Yeah, I like Clemson and Travis. You've been like the whole Clemson guy thing, and they won the title last year, and
you should just always get a chance to defend if you're still undefeated. They won 26, 29 games in a row or something.
Yeah, and
they've been impressive. People say they haven't played anyone, but
I liked what Sweeney said after the game. It's something along the lines of you can prepare for our tape, but you can't prepare for our hearts. And I thought that was awesome.
That's the most Travis thing ever said.
Travis.
I'm surprised you don't have that tattooed on your back.
You should. I might. People probably have hair on their neck standing up after I said that. They're fired up, I bet.
You know what, Travis? You're entering Ray Mendez territory.
I don't know who that is.
So we watched during the Holiday Bowl, because the game got out of hand, ESPN was running this special on Ray Mendez, who's a high school football coach
who was
born with no arms and no legs. And this guy's the most inspirational human being I've ever witnessed. He has no arms, no legs. He's drawing up plays for his team on his phone drawing up plays. And I'm going, how could you possibly, if I played for him, how could you possibly be down? How could you possibly come out of the game and go, oh, this guy's, you know, this, he's, this guy's,
there's beat, no excuses,
this guy's
with
beating
that guy.
Me. I can't coach. It's too tough. Too tough. You too tough. Look at me.
Let me tell you about too tough.
You want to hear about too tough? The guy was playing. They were showing him as a kid. He was playing the piano. He learned
surfing football.
He learned football playing Madden. He has no arms and no legs. He's playing Madden. The guy is how you could possibly not be inspired. And it made me feel so down on myself because I was literally like, Ray Mendez could do my job and do it better than me.
He could.
He could literally do it better.
And Twitter would agree.
And Twitter would agree. And this guy.
So no one would ever question him either.
You are entering Ray Mendez territory.
Yes, you are.
That's great. That guy's a true inspiration.
Do you just have like motivational quotes all over your walls at your house?
No, but they're in the vault, though. They're in the vault. I'll pull them out time to time.
Can you give us some? We've got it. You know, we've got a couple games left.
Can we get a top three Red Box Bowl?
Can we get some, you know.
Top three motivational
SWG
quotes?
I don't know. You guys put me on the spot here. I don't know that I can pull them like that.
All right, but
the other one I gave was great. Let's just say
they're going to talk about. They are. Look, Clemson.
And I'm happy to see that they're going to play for the championship.
I agree. And I would say watching LSU, you would go, wow, you know, LSU is going to smoke them. But hey, Clemson is. They're proving that, you know, don't count them out. It looked like they were done 16-0, like Joe said. But people are going to talk about that. People are going to talk about that call. Obviously, look, it's the third quarter. Ohio State did come back and take the lead. And so you can make a case. So many things could happen, but it's obviously a big play when you take away a touchdown like that. Let's shift gears and talk about NBA replay. And this was Christmas Day. This was the most, right? This is the matchup. This was, everybody was talking about Christmas Day. Lakers, Clippers, this is the battle for LA, and Joe's a Laker fan and the Clippers won, so he's upset. But I thought it was interesting because we saw this actually in the NCAA championship game between Texas Tech and Virginia. And now we've seen in the NBA where Patrick Beverly, LeBron has the ball, the Lakers are down, Beverly guarding LeBron. LeBron goes up to take a shot, Beverly blocks the shot, the ball goes out of bounds. Look, in the history of the game before replay, that ball is out on the defender. It just is. It's just the human eye can't see that. He initiated the contact. He went up to block the shot, knocked the ball out. It's Lakers' ball. In the history of basketball, it's
Lakers. At the schoolyard in Wyo, that's definitely out on the
100%. Yeah, you get blocked, it's your ball. You get it back.
And what happens in Wyo? Is it like when you're playing, where are you playing? Who's playing? What? How do you officiate? What's going on in the YO?
Well, you're still playing in gyms. You're still playing outdoors. You're dealing a lot of wind factor in Wyoming.
I love putting him on the spot.
You adjusted your seat and was
he
like,
did.
I'm going to go.
Throw his shoulders
he's
back.
All he's nervous. Like
got to talk about
what's happening right now.
Oh, no, he's calling on me. It's like the kid in school didn't study. And then the teacher's like, Travis, can you answer how that, you know, who did the War of 1812? How did that start?
Yeah.
So the thing is, and here's the thing. In the history of the game, that's out on the defender. But because now we have replay, right? What happens? We go slow motion, and we frame by frame it, and the ball after Beverly hits it, it's still touching LeBron's finger, and he's actually the last to touch. And so it's happened in the national championship game. This is now where we are. And you have a call that's made throughout the game one way, and then because we're inside the last 2 minutes, now it goes to a review. And it's just interesting because even LeBron was in his post-game comments. He was not happy. He's like, the ball, like, I just think the ball, he blocked it, he hit it, and the ball was out on him. And we go slow motion. And it's the right, and look.
He got it right, though, so.
It's the right call on the court initially, and it's the right call in replay. Right?
But it's the wrong call in our hearts, Travis.
It is. You know what, Joe? That was very Travis-like. It is the wrong call in our hearts.
It sounded good coming out of your mouth like that, too. I like that, you know?
Thanks, bud.
It was good.
Appreciate that.
As fans, are we okay with it?
I don't mind the right call being made. If it's out on you, it's out on you. That's fine.
Yeah, I like it.
But you're okay with, in the first quarter, that's going to be Lakers' ball. Because it's not going to go to review.
No, it should always. There should be a standard.
But wait, but now how we're gonna review all out of bounds?
Don't review out of bounds. I don't know.
Exactly. I'm asking you the tough questions.
The 2 points in the first quarter count the same as the 2 points in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. But in all sports, we always like in the NFL, they should be able to stop.
They should be able to stop it and challenge it.
They do have a coach's challenge, but I don't think they can challenge out of bounds plays.
Well, I feel like if you brought in some kind of sky judge with this as well, like you have
a sky judge.
You've been talking about the sky judge all day.
You want sky judges in all sports.
Yeah. Like, why can't you just have somebody on the sideline looking at the replay and they look at it and say, well, it was off this guy. It's their ball. Let's move on.
Did you buy skyjudge.com? You're ready to like just monetize.
You're invested in the sky judge technology?
I'm just hoping maybe there'll be a job for me down the road somewhere as a sky judge.
Always about you. I swear to you.
You got to think about 5 years down the road, Joe.
You know, we're gonna take a break, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk about the new Travis Hanson. Next on Good Call. All right, we're back on Good Calls. Let's go inside the cube. And, you know, the weekend that was, we had Friday, the Holiday Bowl. Sunday, NFL. We've got Redbox Bowl on Monday. So a lot of action in the cube. But I want to talk about the new Travis Hanson.
2.0?
Nothing new.
So I just want to talk about, like, he's just been, again, so he brought up the whole, I'll pull a lawnmower on you. What's the correct
start
term?
Start up a lawnmower on you.
Okay. So we talked about that last week. And then he's been dropping in things about like all these purchases that he's made.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, so Travis, why don't you tell our listeners that you purchased a new vehicle?
Yeah. I got a nice deal on a lease of a Santa Fe, Hyundai Santa Fe. It's not the nicest car in the market. It's the nicest car I've ever owned. It's 2.0. It's got a turbo
in it.
Yeah. Leather seats, panoramic sunroof. It's cool. Yeah.
So he just drops the whole, I got a turbo, you know, Santa Fe turbo, right? It doesn't have the same. Like, it's not like a Porsche turbo, it's not
a Porsche or a Tesla or a Range, but
for Travis,
it's a standard white guy.
But he starts talking about that, then he's showing up like he's buying new shoes.
He came in with new jeans on today.
But wait, the
people that know me know that this is the time of year I get new clothes because people buy them for me.
No, it reminds me. Here's my theory. Here's my theory. I love it. This is my theory. Travis has gone Breaking Bad on us, and he's cooking meth
in his RV.
He has this big driveway, and you can put a lot of cars. He has an RV, and he's cooking meth, and he is now a meth dealer, a la Breaking Bad. And he's got all this extra cash buying turbos and all this stuff. Now he's talking about you know, starting the lawnmower up because he's got to protect my family.
Exactly.
I've got to tell you the best, Travis. So today yes. we're it's between games. There's a long walkway
in the studio. And we're walking down, and I hear Travis behind me, and I turn around. He comes running up. He's like, "Look, man, my new shoes!" And he like stops and slides across the floor. I swear, I go, "Dude, can you do that again so I can record it and show it to Dean?" He's like, "No, it was like a 7-year-old kid, dude. He was sliding across the cement floor." It was great.
Well, I always jog because we don't have a lot of time in between commercial breaks or when the games go to half. And so I always jog. And those floors in that studio, they were slick. So and the new shoes were slick.
The new Travis. So Travis also talk about your worries. So the difference when Pereira's there and I'm there.
I don't want to talk about
this.
Don't worry, MP doesn't listen to the show.
Pereira doesn't listen.
No, it's nothing about Mike. It's people at Fox here.
No. Don't worry. So talk about your worries let's talk about the environment when Pereira's there and I'm not, right? Which doesn't happen very often, but on college football, there's been some Saturdays where Pereira has taken the late games. When Pereira's there and I'm not, give me the difference in the environment.
The environment's just quieter. We're watching the games. We're talking about what we're going to eat for dinner, what, you know, if we should order in food with Mike and we're talking about him wearing Uggs and we're kind of laughing about that. And it's kind of quiet where it's more like business. It's by the book.
It's the adult table.
Do you ever worry about HR coming in and asking questions?
It's the adult table.
I don't want to talk about that.
It's the adult table. So now when I'm there, what is it like compared to mine?
We're talking about all kinds of topics. You're always quizzing us like, "Hey, come on, give me something here." You're keeping the energy in the room high, which is great. And the amount of topics we discuss are endless. And it's fun. We open up our minds.
It's more fun. It's the kids' table.
There's a lot of gum, hot tamales, and M&M's.
Yeah. The amount of candy that Dean ingests is incredible.
No, he doesn't ingest it. Those
are just the hot tamales and the Mike and Ike's. Just eats the outer shell.
Yeah.
And so I joked before we started. I was like, you know, anytime you're there, I just worry the next person to come up the stairs is going to be HR or our boss to say we're shutting this whole thing down.
You know, Goldie's like, hot mic, go, hot mic. The mic's on.
So if we have Goldie he's the tech and he handles the audio. And so he's like literally, he's like the angel and the devil on each shoulder because he's just in my ear and he's like saying things like, he's always like saying, "You can't say that. That's not PC." And then he's like, "Yeah, say it on the other side." But it's more fun when I'm just say it, Travis. It's more fun when I'm there.
It is fun. It's definitely fun. It's more fun. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Wow, that was so hard for you to say.
It's all in the trust tree today.
Yeah. Today, Goldie got back on the mic and he goes, "Did I miss anything that would offend anyone?"
Yeah,
it's so good.
And you know who else has become? And there's a group of guys that work with us, and they're all former or current officials. But you know who really is becoming one of my favorites?
Nelson. Yeah.
Shout out to Nelson Bay right now. I know he's listening. He's one of our devoted listeners, and he has become one of my favorites.
He's great.
Nelson's great.
He is just
starting a commercial for Keurig.
He's been in a Keurig commercial. He wears these like cool hats. He comes in. He's very like demonstrative. He's funny. I didn't tell you guys this earlier, but one of you two, I'm going to replace one of you two with Nelson on the podcast. So you guys are going to, you guys need to step up your game and see, you know, who's going to make it.
Well, I hope Nelson knows how to edit in Adobe Audition. So
we can export that out. We don't have a problem. So, okay. So I have here non-flex, flex. This happened in the...
Yeah, what is that?
What is flex, weird flex?
Well, I had never even heard the term flex before.
We were teaching Travis what flex meant.
I heard it before you guys said it on Saturday, and I got called out for a weird flex because I was
What was his flex? Yeah, it was a weird flex.
I had never heard the term before, and this girl I work with in my department, she's like 24, so she's really young and has all the lingo, and I don't have that because I'm the old man of the group, and I said, "Oh, I'm really good at picking out the C's chocolates because you know, I always pick the good ones. And then I said, well, because I eat any of them, it doesn't matter. And she's like, well, that's a weird flex. And I was like, what?
It's like a brag type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I got that after the fact. I was like, it's a weird
Travis
flex.
Is always, Travis does have a lot of weird flex.
Keeping it weird. Even with the 24-year-old girl who brought in See's candy.
Yeah. I always pick the right one.
I hope you like dark chocolate with cherry in the middle, because that's what that one is.
Well, it was all started because my boss is like, oh, Trav's really good at picking out the good ones. I'm like, no, it's because I like all of them. Like,
but you did, Joe. You said that I'm good at the non-flex flex.
Yeah, you're great at, like, whenever we're talking about something, you'll be like, oh, you know, Jerry Jones is a good friend of mine. I was talking to him the other day. He's like,
that's name dropping. I don't
name drop. But that's a flex.
But I don't name drop like that.
No, but you do it in a very non-name drop way, because we all know you really do know all those people pretty well.
So I'm just telling a story.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not.
Which makes us think about what's the barometer? Where does the standard person, like the celebrity
scale. So you have
the A-list. Yeah, the scale. You have the A-list, the B-list. Dean's, we think a C-list.
I think I'm C-list. I do. So to me, it's A, certainly. That's your Clooney, your Brad Leos. Pitt, your Leo, your Oprah. You know, that's your A-list.
Everyone's gonna know who that is.
Okay. Yeah,
everyone. Your grandma knows who it is. Yeah. Then you have your B-list, which is kind of like next level. But you have people.
You're like, I've seen that guy in something, but I don't know what. That's,
but even that, no, yeah. Even like
no,
a B-list.
I think that's more of a C.
Yeah, that's okay. More of a C. Most people know who B-lists are, but it's not like a universal thing.
There's gonna be like old people who don't know who that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But let's come. Who's a good B-list celebrity?
What about the guy who's in that new show on Fox, Deputy? What's his name?
Yeah, like that guy. Stephen Dorff.
Okay.
He's a B.
I'd say even like a Russell Wilson. Not everyone's going to know.
Yeah.
B-list, yeah, a lot of sports guys, maybe.
Sports people, yeah.
So C-list is the one that you go, what? Did I either?
I know that dude from somewhere.
I went to high school with him.
Did I meet that guy at the Whaler in Venice, or was he in a movie or commercial?
That's C-list. D-list is all of your – D-list is basically your reality shows.
Got it.
Like, that's your D-list. Now, you can jump to, like
– unless
like
Jersey Shore
jumped.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jersey Shore, they jumped at some of these. But your majority of your reality, to me, are D-list. Because I don't know – we're not going to know Pam from Temptation Island, even though Joe will.
I definitely don't know Pam.
Yeah.
I DM'd her.
What did she say?
She didn't respond.
So
this is getting weird.
And then we said is that's your celebrity scale.
A through D.
After that, we determine, I think there's a letter and I think it's G. Everybody is G.
Everyone starts
general.
At a G.
Everybody starts G.
G for general. That sounds
G
good.
G for general. Everybody starts G. You don't become a celebrity till D. Now there's E and F, which I feel like both of you guys are somewhere in ENF because you know enough celebrities and you run in some circles. Like Travis, you're friends with, you know, we work with Michael Strahan and Howie Long. We're friends with them. You're friends with Nate Burleson and these other people. So I feel like
just for working in the industry.
Exactly. So yeah. I feel like the E and the F are for people that have something crazy is going to happen for you to get to D.
Yeah.
But you're in that EF range.
He's gonna start a lawnmower on somebody, and it's gonna go on.
No,
YouTube.
See, I don't want to get famous that way, and I don't want to get in the.
Yeah,
scale
but what if it's like somebody like trying to rob an old lady's purse, and you start a lawnmower?
Oh, okay. Hero. Viral. The viral.
The SWG started a lawnmower on a robber.
If that happens, though, seriously, if that happens, while you're pummeling the guy, you have to say lawnmower.
You made me start a lawnmower on you.
Yeah,
I never wanted to do this.
Yes, you have to. Okay. I may set it up. I'm going to pay somebody to rob an old lady near you, and you have to say lawnmower because that will go viral. Like nothing has gone viral.
We'll jump over Dean.
We'll just file this under something that's never going to happen.
It will be a dance. It will definitely be a dance.
Can you imagine?
The lawnmower.
Him walking down Third Street. Oh my God, that's the lawnmower guy.
That's the lawnmower guy. You.
Dude.
Please.
This is your shot.
Please.
Yes, it'll happen. Yeah, okay.
You heard it here first.
All right.
It's not happening.
What else happened? What else?
I don't know. We talked about Ultimate Frisbee. Like, Joe came up with this random question. Like,
okay,
we met some Ohio State Ultimate Frisbeers.
Players.
Is that
players.
Like a club sport or?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
So.
It's a club sport.
Yeah.
They're at our table. There's not FBS.
So the way that it got started is.
I don't know.
Here's the way it got started. We have a friend there. I look over.
Seems like a game when you play when you're smoking weed.
He's got a napkin and there's like geometry written all over this napkin with a pen. And I go, what are you doing? I'm doing math trying to figure out. This kid's telling me that you could pour 4.5 beers in a Frisbee. And I go, there's no way that you could fit 4.5 beers inside a Frisbee. I'm ready to walk across the street and buy a Frisbee because we were at the beach to see if you could actually do it. And the kid looks me dead in the eye. He goes, I'm on the Ultimate Frisbee team at Ohio State. I know. I was like, all right, then I'm not going to go with the Frisbee. Screw it. Because I was ready to put money down. Like, hey, there's no way 4.5 beers are fitting in here.
Do you think that's like their initiation when you join the Ultimate Frisbee team? Is like, you have to chug the entire Frisbee,
bro. There's definitely
a
term for it. There's a term for it.
So the interesting part about the Ultimate Frisbee. So I started asking this kid about Ultimate Frisbee because I had no idea. I thought he was talking Frisbee golf. This is like football with a Frisbee.
Yeah, Ultimate Frisbee.
Just for people who don't know. The kid tells, so I go, like, what are the officials like? Apparently, it's self-officiated.
There's no officials.
That seems like chaos.
Absolutely.
How did they decide calls then?
So you call your own calls, and if they disagree, they basically debate until one person taps out.
Debate. Like, you literally go, okay, dude, you win.
All right, fine. You're in.
Or if there's no, if the stalemate, just do over.
You got to do the whole play over.
There's certain people that you just, like, you have friends, you grow up, you can all think of your buddy who's like, I don't want to get in an argument. Okay, you can have it, dude.
But he said that he was explaining, like, they'll literally, like, point, like, my foot was in and point at the mark on the grass and the divot, and they'll have these long conversations, and somebody will be like, all right, fine.
And in my mind, I'm just sitting there thinking, this...
Well, I was supposed to have dinner after the match, but I guess I can't go now.
If this was a ghetto sport, there would be fights nonstop.
Oh, absolutely. Like all day long. Oh, that is SWG. Oh, yeah. It's the Ultimate Frisbee.
But I feel like, Dean, there might be an opportunity for us here. Like, what if we started training refs?
Started like an officiating group for the Ultimate Frisbee?
These kids all got money.
Create some replay.
No, that's a shot right there.
I'm surprised they don't televise that. We're watching some crazy stuff.
I'm surprised Travis
Saturday.
Didn't say, you know, they should bring a sky judge into Ultimate Frisbee. And you know,
maybe it'd be a fly judge.
Just fly a drone over the top of the game. Look right here, guys. The sky judge says he was in bounds.
Yeah, I think we could do it. All right.
That's what I think.
All right, let's go Brain of Blandino.
All right. So do it again.
All right, let's go inside the Brain of Blandino.
You're not going 3 billion and O fighting women.
Okay. So, all right. So this was a friend of mine that was like big into MMA, actually got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, we used to watch UFC all the time and Pride. And he used to make ridiculous comments, like ridiculous. And he's a big dude and he would mess a lot of people up. But his one thing was, he was like, In a sanctioned match, not like a street fight, but in a sanctioned match, he would not lose to a woman in a fight. And I'm like, dude, there's over 3 billion women in the world. You're not going 3 billion and 0. You're not. Like, I'm sorry. You're just not. Somewhere, there's someone that can kick your ass.
I don't know. No. I kind of agree with him. No.
See? And my friend, I'm not going to name him, is kind of a douchebag. And you're a douchebag.
I'm not a douchebag.
I actually was going to ask if it was you, because you do jiu-jitsu. You just got a new belt. And
I know, but I'm not a... Okay, if you're a big guy, you're a black belt. Have you ever did anything with a black belt in jiu-jitsu? They're amazing.
I understand, but you're not going 3 billion.
Okay, first of all, let's quantify that. You can't have 3 billion fights in your life.
Then don't make the comment that you can beat up every woman.
But what if he said I could fight a woman every day and never lose?
No,
he's for the rest of my life.
We're talking about a sanctioned match.
Yeah.
That he would not lose to a female fighter.
I would probably agree with
that. I disagree.
Do you think we'll ever see the day where we have an MMA fight against a woman and a man?
Who's going to beat him?
Somewhere there's a female who knows some crazy shit.
We know who all the best are.
And would beat his ass. I'm sorry. You're not going 3 billion to no.
I'm with Dean on that.
You're not.
Okay, we know who the toughest woman in the world is, so we could actually quantify
this.
No, we don't.
Amanda Nunes is the best right now.
Amanda Nunes, but she's fighting in the UFC. We don't know all the... all the people in the world, just because we think that who's the pound, John Jones is the pound for pound best fighter in the UFC. We don't know in Thailand or in Russia or in all over the world somewhere that there is.
If you're a better
somebody,
fighter than that, wouldn't you be fighting professionally?
No, absolutely not. We don't. That,
not
why,
everyone
they don't want to be a fighter.
Great, those breaks.
They don't want to be in the UFC. Now,
there's some dude out there dipping corn dogs in the batter who's could kick John Jones.
100%. Okay. Did you? I'm sorry. Did you see, if you saw our friend Shane Fazin, if you saw Shane in a bar, would you think he could kick your ass?
No.
No.
No, but he could.
He's like 5'10 and doesn't look like anything.
I don't even think he's that tall.
No, yeah. He's like 5'8, if that, yeah, on his tippy toes.
But that guy is
and
crazy.
He's like 100, crazy, sure. What, 50 pounds?
No, I think he's 165.
Yeah.
But again, he's not the baddest dude in the world. He's good fight.
I understand that.
There's a million people out there who don't look like they can fight.
That's such a. It's. I'm sorry.
All right, douchebag friend. I agree with you.
Yes.
From one douchebag to another, I'm with you.
You're not going 3 billion and no. All right.
All right. That's the show. This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino. Please follow me on Twitter at Dean Blandino and Instagram at Dean.Blandino. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Rules Podcast, and be sure to rate our podcast on the iHeartRadio app and on Apple Podcasts. Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.